see. There.
Okay, yeah. All right, yeah, that'll work. Want it? Yeah. All right, welcome everybody. Does everyone, there was kind of a mess up in the copying of the lesson. So did everyone pick up the full lesson with the answers? You want this one if you don't have it. If you don't have it, raise your hand, because it's not every day you get the answers, right? Okay, also, for the next lesson, in the back, we'll be there, so grab that after class. So, very good. I believe everyone's coming in. Joel, can you lead us in an opening prayer? All right. Settled in. All right, Joel, I think we're settled.
Heavenly Father, we thank you for this time that we have studied. We ask that you be with Danny as he marks things that he studied to share with us. Heavenly Father, we thank you for each and every one that's here today. Help us to glean as much as we possibly can from this study. Genesis,
amen. All right, so today's lesson, we take an opportunity, especially as we're getting ready to get into what we call the patriarchs, to spend a little time looking at the geography and the way of the life of a patriarch, so that, again, with the good fortune of having two segments to go over that, we have time to fit in a class like this, because even though I have 45 minutes, that really isn't enough time to cover. I mean, it's quite a few years, quite a bit of things to cover. But we'll do our best and getting there. Now, if you were wondering, first of all, did it seem like pages were missing? Again, there were. So there should have been like two pages with maps, sort of hitting the life of Abraham, Jacob, and Joseph. Isaac doesn't really get a map, mainly because he didn't really move around a lot. And the particular set of maps I pulled it off, kind of, they didn't even create one for him. Now, if you're wondering why in the world did I go through this peculiarity of saying, okay, where's a city mentioned in Genesis, and then what's this about Joshua and coming in and taking the land? And it kind of comes from the Deuteronomy class that was offered a segment or so ago, in which Marty Broadwell kept reminding the class that, you know, these five books were written as the people were going into this land. And so here they're learning their history. It's written down. Moses, they're being taught these things. And so they're hearing about this. So just as we're hearing about Hebron, Shechem, they're hearing about it, and they're getting ready to go deal with that. They're going to be traveling through that land. And so sort of went about then just doing an exercise of these cities that we read about when we read about the patriarchs. How many of them do we read, like, in the conquest, as they're coming in the land with Moses, and then, of course, more so with Joshua. And what we see is that I came up with only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 cities that are mentioned in Genesis that are not mentioned in Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua. So there's a very good connection there. And this was sort of an exercise to kind of make that connection, because really before I went through doing this, I couldn't have told you how many weren't mentioned. So the class was kind of put together so I could do that exercise, and hopefully you'll see some benefit in that. All right. So we look at the timelines here, and this is, I believe that, you know, the Exodus occurred 446, 406, they get to the land. I think there's very good biblical and historical reasoning to that. And so just to kind of give you these sort of ages, then that means we're dealing with Abraham according to, again, backtracking time, about 2166 B.C. So that's a bit of time ago. And just to give you a feel, you know, when you're really dealing with a lot of the archaeology, that the stuff that we're really on good solid grounds about, you get down to the days of Solomon and a little bit after Solomon, that really the history, you know, finding name places, things like that, really outside of the Bible is a lot better. So we're not going to show you any slides that say Abraham slept here or Jacob slept here or this was Joseph's house. There's just, you don't find that in archaeological records. And again, realize we're really dealing back in time when they have discovered a lot, but still, they're not all that knowledgeable. So we're dealing with a period of around 2166 to around 1806. So, and that's B.C., that's not A.D. And we start with Abraham in Ur of the Chaldees. So he's over in Mesopotamia, and he's really living in this golden age that are about the time he's leaving is really Ur, that region is at a high advanced civilized, and he's getting ready to leave a really advanced, maturely wealthy country and go live in tent. So, you know, when he's asked to leave, just realize kind of what we know culturally wise there. And there's, again, that's, you know, you don't, that would be typically how they dressed in or of that time, the latest old-timey fashion. City of Ur was excavated. And this little, it's like a little trapezoid box was discovered. And again, showing people traveling, moving. And it's, again, not exactly when Abraham lived, but hey, pretty close to the time period. So that when we see a piece of discovered in an excavation from Ur, kind of gives you a feel for what it might have been looking like as Terah took his family out. There's a pretty famous statue of this guy, Naram-Sin, another giving you kind of a feel of the wardrobe, the haircut, of the era. So about 100 years before, but they weren't quite as changeable, but still there. This is kind of, I mean, we don't know that all the women behave this way, and this is, again, is an artist's imagination, but this guy does a pretty good job of trying to be historically accurate. But again, sort of what is seen there is you have this ram on a kind of on a bush, and it wasn't they weren't thinking about this upcoming sacrifice of Isaac, but what's really amazing is you see this piece of art from Ur, and it just really brings, visualizes to you what you would have seen there. And then they discover this big lyre harp there with this magnificent kind of ram piece there. And this was kind of the royalty people, so this wasn't everybody that would have this. This is some jewelry that, again, was found in a tomb. So, again, the height, the fashion, the most fashionable royal kind of women would be wearing this kind of attire at that time period. And, again, here's this ram that's found. Again, no association with Abraham and the sacrifice of Isaac. But, again, we see that image, and it puts us very much in mind of that ram with his head kind of caught in the thorn bushes when Isaac is sacrificed there. So kind of gives us, again, a connection. No, again, association with Abraham, but we have that story. We have visualizations of that as we read it, and at least here is an artifact found from that time period, which brings that kind of to mind. Again, an artist's rendition looking at the excavation of Ur of about what the city might have looked like. So that ziggurat affair there, and I had meant to, but I didn't get included. But, you know, we have Jacob and the ladder. We always associate that ladder, right? But one of the translations, the way it could be translated, is stairs. And so, and actually, at least visually, is more imaginable because, again, they would have these ziggurats with this long stair. So that if you use that translation or that translation choice of a stair, what would come to your mind is these ziggurat steps that just kind of go up and up. Here would be the harbor of Ur. So this was the land, the country that Abraham came from, that when it was asked, you know, go into this land that I have promised you, I'm going to show it to you, hadn't seen it, but, you know, go. This was the kind of society that he was leaving. And so Terah took Abraham, his son Lot, the whole family, they went, and they didn't get into the promised land. They made it up to Haran, which is kind of at the apex of the road network that would have gone from Ur over, because you didn't go across the desert. You went up and over there. And so you don't know. And actually, I was looking at one map that still had Haran as kind of in that Ur influence in its best of days. So, and his health might have stopped him, because as soon as Terah dies, God comes to Abraham and says, right, go journey into the land. And so Haran there, as we kind of indicated, is at, here's the Euphrates, so Ur is down here. So you follow that up and then come over and then come down into this land here. So this is some ruins from Haran. And there I kind of was really pulling pictures of the area. So again, a fairly arid region, especially compared probably to Ur, at least on the river and all. But you can raise sheep. So we know that they're raising sheep as they come into the land. So a good place to fatten up sheep. You know, now Abraham says, you know, go from your country, your kindred, your father's house, to the land that I will show you, and I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, so that you will be a blessing. And so here's this promise given. He's going to go in. And so that's one thing, again, to remember about this whole patriarchal time. They're roaming this land that's been promised to them, but they don't own the land, right? And actually, there's a whole thing of Abraham buying a place to bury Sarah there in Hebron, and that how big a deal that is just to buy that land. So he comes into the land, and he comes to Shechem. So that's the first place that Abraham comes, and so he's really just barely kind of come into the land. And we associate Shechem with when Joshua comes in, with going up. I mean, as soon as the roadway was sort of cleared, in other words, Ai was cleared, the people went up to Shechem. And there was a reading of the law, renewing again of this pledge to come into this land. So it's kind of interesting, right? We don't when we read that in Joshua, we don't really think about this being the first place that Abraham comes in and settles. And so here's Shechem again. It's sort of, it's in between Mount Ebal, Mount Gerizim, and then you have these fields. So he's not in Shechem, right? He's out in this field region. And again, giving you there a feel for what the land is like around Shechem, where Abram, at this point, would have set up his tents. And then again, so some vegetation, but not again, just tremendously over rich in vegetation. And then, so we have Shechem, where we're going to have so many different events, right? That's where they come, where the kingdom divides, is at Shechem. We have the woman at the well, jumping to the New Testament there at Sychar. So that's all occurring right around this region where first Abraham came to the land. Now there's a lot more building, so you really like these 19-aught pictures because this gives you much more a feel for what Abraham might have seen with a city there. Here is what is identified as Jacob's Well, and probably, you know, that if it's not that well, it's one close by there. That, again, you have that region with that valley. So that is the first place that Abraham comes into the land and stops. And so from there, he moves to the hill country on the east of Bethel and pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. And then he built an altar to the Lord and called upon the name of the Lord. So he comes here from Shechem and comes on down. Now, what you'll notice, you know, we've got Hebron coming up here, right? And we're going to hit Beersheba. So all of those are along what's called the Central Ridge Road. So he's following that road down. And then the bigger road was this King's Highway that kind of cut all those hills up and down, and it's right along this plateau that's east of the Jordan River, pretty flat region. And so a lot of the caravans would come this way, some would come along this coastal road, and then this was more of a local regional road, kind of again. So he's just following that ridge line right along into the land. And when Joshua comes in to conquer, right, he comes in here to Jericho, Ai is right kind of on that Central Ridge Road. So with the conquest of that, he's then either able to go south or north in conquering the land. And so the Israelites, when they conquer that road, work, again, the land, work right along that pathway. So again, kind of an interesting, we normally don't connect that together, that kind of history. And so again, hopefully as you read through the worksheet, you'll say, hey, wow, it's kind of interesting. And that was, you know, again, when we think of the conquest, we really, Ai is one that we think of, right? Achan's sin, they think they're going to take this city, it's real easy, and they fail. And so, you know, and it mentions Bethel, Ai, Bethel. But of course, with Joshua there, that attention is there on Ai and all the issues there. And, you know, we're kind of told there that he set his tent between these cities. So potentially, you don't know for sure, but as Joshua's running around, the people around Ai, they could be stepping on the area right where Abraham had camped at one point in time. So again, no real mention of that, and we don't know exactly where he camped, but again, you get that kind of connection there. And so here, come out a little dark, Beten is Bethel, and we don't know exactly actually where Ai is. That there's their traditional place, is they're pretty sure is not because they hadn't found any excavations, and there have been some guys looking pretty hard. They think they have one, but they hadn't gotten everyone to admit it. But the locations are pretty close. Again, you've got a lot of cities there, these are two potential locations of where Ai is, and this is where Bethel is. And so that, again, gives you a good feel. Not a bad place for sheep, right? As we kind of go through here, we're looking. There is good pasture land and all four sheep that we're seeing there. So, again, you can look at that as a sheep herder and says, yeah. And one of the things that is amazing is that this soil, this region here, I mean, that's sheep herding is still a big thing today, that given the amount of rainfall, raising sheep, that there is enough rainfall to produce enough grass and water to herd sheep. And then he goes down to the Negev. The Negev, it's also referred to as the south, or the southland in scriptures. So when you see those, oh, I meant to put a note. If you wondered how I was able to put together this amazing kind of set of stuff, BibleAtlas.org is a wonderful resource. They have an effort to locate every named place in the Bible, and they do a very nice job of then also including the scriptures. So BibleAtlas.org is always a nice place to go if you're studying, trying to understand an area. And so I made good use of them to do this as quickly as I could. So he goes down now south to the Negev, kind of the south. And so there we're thinking Beersheba, and there's Gera, a couple of places that, again, we read and associate with the patriarchs. But really this whole kind of region here is the Negev. And so, again, that's where the children were roaming during Exodus, and then they're going to come up through this side. So we read and associate a lot of the Exodus with the southern part. A little more desert-like, not as much vegetation there, but there is some. So again, a lot of room. You can kind of spread out and again feed your livestock. And then here's Beersheba, and again, all of this also is associated as when it rains and when it hasn't rained. With rain, you have more vegetation. Now, they go on into Egypt, and I didn't include Egypt because Exodus, they're trying to leave, to escape Egypt, so I didn't really include those on the questionnaires. But Abraham tells the lie, right? That, well, it's a half-truth. Are not all of the information that does say, hey, Sarah's my sister, I'm not married to her. Well, she is his half-sister, but he is married to her. But one of the things when the Pharaoh kicks them out of the land is he gives them camels. Now, you wouldn't potentially realize, but this is one area where critics just really flip out and say, here is proof that the Bible is false, is with camels. You know, not the most friendly creatures in the world, but you wouldn't think that this would be what someone would really focus on and say, aha, we have absolute proof, we know for sure that the Bible is false, because we know for a fact that camels were not domesticated in the land of Canaan until 1000 BC. And we're, what, 2100 BC. So there's about 1,000 years difference here. So this is, again, sort of, you know, reading something from the Middle Ages, and they start talking about their car or their Tommy gun or something like that. So, you know, they say, here, this is clear proof. And there was a big article that, well, the archaeologists were digging are working a mine area in Israel from around 1000 BC, and they found evidence of domesticated camels. And they say, hey, we have found this. We've looked around. We haven't found any other evidence. There's no other evidence that we found in Canaan that the camels were here. Therefore, Camels were first introduced into Israel in 1000 BC. All right? So, can anyone just thinking with this scenario and this discovery and this announcement everywhere that here we have absolute proof the Bible is false because we found camels in 1000 BC and we haven't found any other camels? So someone comes up to you and tells you that and makes that, how would you potentially reply? What would be some other pieces of information that you might provide them? Okay. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And that, again, first thing that was brought up, the lack of evidence isn't proof that it isn't there. There's a lot of ground to dig up. Someone might not really put a camel exactly where you want the camel to be. There is evidence of camel's use in Egypt, where, behold, who gave Abraham the camel? A pharaoh. And also there is evidence of use of camels in Mesopotamia. And where did Abraham come from? Mesopotamia. So it really is a weak argument. And, you know, they haven't found the perfect piece of evidence to put the critics to rest. But there is some pretty sound points to be made on this. That even though they haven't found a camel from 2100 BC sitting in Beersheba, there is plenty of other evidence there to show that camels were domesticated and camels were in use. But again, it is very frustrating when dealing with Bible critics because, again, they will jump on this and ride this camel till it dies at noon. So, just be aware of that. I don't know, have any of you ever gotten into a discussion about no camels, therefore the Bible wasn't real or wasn't written until the Babylonian captivity? Again, if you don't read the kind of the layman's archaeology stuff, you don't come across this. But it was just a few years ago, all the newspapers really blurbed about it. But here are some pictures again from 19-aught-something. Here we have some camels drinking, and they like to drink. Here's a man proudly showing his camel. Again, camel, ship of the desert. I mean, that's how you would move those. They just, you know, they fill up with water, and then they can go a long time without water. So very, very important across the desert. And so here we have, again, that passage of the Pharaoh saying, leave my land here, take these camels, all of this stuff, and get out of the country. Also, though, we come around and have camels in Haran, right? When going to find a wife for Isaac, goes back up there, and the servant says, you know, praise the Lord, you know, whoever comes and helps me water these camels, you know, that's... That's the wife for Isaac. So here you kind of have this water. And again, when a camel drinks water, he drinks a lot of water. And this water is being pulled out of the ground. Let's see if I got... I've tried to get some. You're pulling these up by ropes. And actually, what's very interesting, you go over to a lot of these wells, and what you'll find on the edges are these grooves where pulling the rope up against the rock literally has worn a groove into the rock. And again, tended to be the women's job to lift this water up. There is kind of got ahead of myself, but here is a camel displayed on a piece of pottery, and it's again, a good bit of data of camels being used. Kitchen has done a good book on the reliability of the Old Testament and deals with a lot of these facts. If you really get into a discussion with someone who's really harping on camels, that's a good book to kind of go and, again, find just this other archaeological materials. So they come out of the land and come back up, and so gets back up to Bethel and Ai, and Lot's with them, and they both have a lot of sheep and livestock, and their herdsmen start fighting with each other over water. And we find several cases, again, right, with water, that Jacob builds, or they dig wells, until there's finally, and gets kicked out, until finally that doesn't occur. And so water for animals are very important here. And so Abraham says, you know, you choose which way you want to go. And he goes down into Sodom and Gomorrah, and, you know, we have the whole story, the destruction there with Lot, of Sodom and Gomorrah. But, you know, we go today and we can't find Sodom and Gomorrah. There's people that have dug, that have extrapolated, said this city or that city is it. And it's all kind of in this southern region of the Dead Sea. And again, salt. But whatever happened, that before it happened, it was a very rich pasture land that when Lot looked at it, saw great value there. So again, kind of this area, there is a feature, Mount Sodom, that associates back. Now, this is not actually Lot's wife, but it is a formation, and people call that all Lot's wife, kind of from that story. But there is, again, this kind of region here, Mount Sodom, and kind of the top of that. And again, we associate that whole Dead Sea area as not having a lot of life. And so, and again, we don't know where the city is. So you might say, well, it's all a mythical place, right? That Sodom didn't really exist, that someone made it up. Again, we that have, you know, look, study the Bible, see many reasons that that would not be the case. But there are, again, people who just, I can't find it, I can't touch it, therefore it's not real. Yes? Yeah. You know, there has been some excavations and things like that, but I have not necessarily read that particular thing. What they did find are some archives in the city of Ebla, and it talks about dealing with Sodom. So here are a bunch of clay tablets buried in this city, and a lot of discussion about Sodom. Now, Gomorrah is not listed, but Sodom is there. And so it's a real city. It's a real place. People interacted with it. And so now, in a place today where we would not put a city, in the time of the Ebla tablets, there was a city there. So to answer your question precisely, I don't know that I have read that. But again, today I wouldn't build a city there. And in the days of Ebla, I have one. I don't want to do that. Okay. And so here is one of the Ebla tablets. And initially they said Gomorrah was there, but on further looking, other people said Gomorrah wasn't there. So there was a whole big stir about that. But Sodom, Zebion, Admon, Hazor, Megiddo, Jerusalem, Gaza, just as the Armani tablets mention a lot of these places that we read about in the Bible, Ebla does. And again, these are from that time period, actually 100, 200 years before Abraham is marching around the town. So it's been buried in dirt. So nobody snuck in and wrote that. So the city of Sodom existed. Even though we can't find it today, there's not a question about that. So then an interesting thing is we read about Lot at the gate. And then also remember when Abraham went to buy land to bury Sarah. Where was that done at? It was done at the gate. So you don't go to the courthouse in these days and times. You go to the city gate. Now, much later, you're dealing with the days of Ahab. So, over a thousand years separate these. But you can go to the city of Dan, and there's actually the little place similar to what you read about Ahab setting up at the city gate. And so at this whole kind of time period, again, civil matters were taking care of the gate. So it is possible, I think some critics or some commentaries will say that, I mean, Lot could have been the mayor of the town or whatever, or held the position because he's sitting at the gate when the angels come there. So you have that incident. And then, again, with what's really interesting is at Hebron, they've actually found a gate that would have been around the time period of Abraham. So, you know, give or take several hundred years, but still pretty close to the region. And so here's a reconstruction of this gate at Hebron. So now, again, what you don't find is, you know, Abraham was here at the gate. That's not scribbled on the rocks. You're not going to find that. But what archaeology does a really nice job is, again, reread this whole event occurring at the gate of Hebron, right? And so here, archaeologists have dug up a gate that potentially was in use in that time when this event occurred. And so we kind of combine the two, and so that's kind of interesting. So there's kind of a top view there of the Hebron gate. The other thing is, not too far from Hebron, in that region, 1965, they found a burial cave. And, you know, not a lot in there, but they did find some bones, some jars. And then there's this dagger here. And so, again, that dagger was not the dagger used by Abraham when he was sacrificing Isaac, right? Because this guy's cave is not Abraham and that. I mean, there's no indication that this is the cave that Abraham was buried in. But this dagger is the sort of style of dagger used in the time of Abraham. And so if you've ever tried to imagine what kind of knife Abraham would have been using, at least you have here an image of one that is of the time period. So here, the pictures that I pulled quickly kind of from this is kind of with Hebron, with a lot of vineyards. I don't know these vineyards necessarily existed in the time when Abraham was going around there, but today if you were to go to Hebron, you would see all of these vineyards. Herod built kind of a tomb or a monument where Abraham, Sarah, all the patriarchs that were buried, he put this big structure over that. And actually, if you try to imagine the architecture that what the temple looked like in the days of Jesus, this actually has survived from the days of Herod and give you a little bit of a feel there. But he put this big thing over, and so pretty well covered up so that There have been some activity there, but nothing to really kind of recover or look at what the original tomb might have looked like. But, you know, again, caves commonly used in burial there. And so here, then he goes back down to this region, to Gera, and Abimelech sort of, you know, gets into similar trouble there with lying. But the land kind of, and here around here is Gera, that region. Again, just, you know, you can feed sheep there, but not necessarily the greatest place. And then at Beersheba, we're said there that made a covenant at Beersheba. Then Abimelech and Philco, the commander of the army, rose up and returned to the land of the Philistines. And Abraham planted a tamarisk tree in Beersheba and called there on the name of the Lord, the everlasting God. And Abraham sojourned many days in the land of the Philistines. So you kind of think, hold on, the Philistines go back to David, right, and Saul and all of that time period. But the Philistines apparently were used as mercenaries by the Egyptians for a good while. And it was sort of in this region that those Philistine mercenaries were kind of used there. But this is actually in Beersheba and kind of gives you a feel of a tree planted there, giving you some shade. A lot of discussion, I didn't pull everything together I wanted to, but women and water and carrying water. And so here are Bedouins with the water on their heads, and that, even though it's not perfect to use Bedouins as examples of what life would have been like for Sarah, Rebecca, Rachel, it's sort of at least the best we can have with a photograph. And so here, carrying water, getting water out of a busy desert well, a man, again, giving water, a water well close to Bethlehem, Joseph's well at Dothan, kind of where he got tossed in, right, by his brothers, well there being used. Here are women making bread, and you can actually, if you really want to get a feel for what that's like, you can go down to LaGrange, and they have a setup where you'll cook bread on in a similar fashion to the way it's been cooked for many, many years in the Middle East. As we're kind of coming towards an end, is that, you know, Joseph gets sold as a slave. And, of course, it's a bad thing. But he gets down to Egypt, gets the land prepared for the people to come during the days of the famine. Again, I got them, but I didn't get them quite into the slide set as I was trying to put. When the Egyptians buried stuff, you know, they figured they needed everything from daily life and the everlife. And rather than putting a whole granary, real size granary in a tomb and stuff, they would make all these little nice models. And so, you know, they would literally, you know, have these square rooms where they would pour the grain in for storing it. But actually, you know, we're told that, you know, the Mennonites, when they bought Joseph, that they paid 20 shekels of silver for him. All right, so someone did some work and some calculating and some mapping and digging up information. And so here again, you know, we start kind of this third dynasty of Ur's when we have Abraham living. And here's kind of the days of Joseph. So in the Bible, we have a price of a slave for 20 shekels for Joseph. The Sinai at Exodus, 30 shekels. And then 50 shekels here from 2 Kings. So we have this biblical information. We then take secular information and we plot that along there. And what we see is it's pretty much on time scale, right? That we put Joseph at the time period there and we look at the records from kind of the old Babylonian period to the Nazca Erat. You know, we have all these nice tablets. We kind of draw the line. And what we see is it kind of falls on the line. Now, if Genesis was written in the 500 BC and stuff, while the people were in Babylon, this being all made up so the people have a history to understand why they got thrown into captivity, which is the basic logic given because that allows all the prophecies to be looking backwards. They don't want any, because prophecies didn't happen, all that sort of stuff. So the critics say it had to be written that late. So if I'm writing in 400 BC or the Persian, you know, Persian Empire period, and a slave's over 110 shekels, what am I most likely to write? 110 shekels, right? Not 20 shekels. Someone that would know a price of a slave or know what happened, that indeed Joseph was sold for 20 shekels, and that was recorded accurately. And then we go look at the secular history, they fall on top of each other. And so actually there, that occasion of Joshua's being sold into slavery gives us a piece of information that helps us again indicate the accuracy of the Bible. And that the events that you're reading about and that you're going to be studying on in the patriarchs, they're real. They happened. This was real events that you're going to be studying in the class. So remember, there's the next kind of lesson, and then also, right, Grant, there's kind of a few events, two sheets, lessons of the other things that are going on, so be sure to get that. So thank you for your time and attention.